This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Are you saying this is a full bite, puncture wound top and bottom?
Excuse me?
Are you saying this was a full bite of puncture wounds, bottom canines, top canines? Are you saying this is a full bite?
I don't believe any. No, this is not a full bite. There is no penetration, significant penetration of the skin. So this is not a full bite or a complete bite.
Did you say at trial, at the elbow, there's another series of different series of marks that again have linear abrasions up where the pointer is, and then down below some punctate, superficial round, small abrasions, again representing upper and lower teeth, in my opinion. Was that your opinion at trial, that this represented upper and lower teeth?
Yes.
And these lower teeth, what teeth were these?
What teeth?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Were they the canines?
Could be a canine, could be incisors.
Okay. There we go. Thank you. And so your opinion at trial is these four could all be canines.
Which four?
One, two, and then the two punctures, or punctate.
That is a possibility. It is actually, and I think I said this too, that this could actually be a configuration of two separate bites. Where you have canine, puncture wound, punctate lesion, from the, so upper canines, lower canines. And then this could be a separate one. Just can't tell. There's not enough specificity in this configuration of wounds.
And you have nothing to compare it to either.
No.
Do you see the distance is different between what you said is a four set upper and lower canine and this one here, this canine? Do you see the obvious difference?
With all due respect, Mr. Brennan, again, the elbow moves, so the skin moves. The skin overlying the elbow moves, and we don't know the configuration that this arm was in at the time those wounds were inflicted. You cannot make a generalization.
I'm going to ask you one more time. You don't have to answer. Do you see the obvious distance between wound one and three where you say that it was the canines? Do you see that?
Objection, Your Honor.
So I'm going to strike the part that says you don't need to answer. Can you answer that question, please, Doctor? And then we'll move on, Mr. Brennan.
I see the difference, but I understand the difference.
Okay. If these were canine wounds, they can't be claw wounds, right?
Yes.
And based on your knowledge and study and whatever you're relying on, you have no way of telling if this is canines or a claw.
Not 100%, correct?
Not even 100%. You don't have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty whether it's canines or claws, do you?
I believe those are canines.
Okay. Did you testify at the Lanigan hearing when Mr. Alisi was asking you questions? Did you observe any claw marks with regard to the injuries, and you said it's possible?
Possible, yes.
How can you give an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty it was canines, and in the same breath and statement say, well, it's possibly claw wounds as well?
Objection, Your Honor.
Well, I'm going to allow it.
My opinion about reasonable degree of medical certainty is about the whole arm, the configuration, the pattern of the whole arm, and not any one individual wound.
Okay. Wound four up here. What do you think this might be?
I don't know. I'm not certain.
Well, I mean, in the totality of a dog attack, it has to be something related to a dog because we don't know that it was there before. Had it been something, right?
It's probably related to the dog, yes.
Well, you don't think he just had this independent wound, and then all these came from the dog attack, and this one just happened to be hanging out waiting for them?
That's correct. I don't think that he had a separate wound.
You don't think this one maybe was caused by the broken shards of glass from the taillight during an alleged collision, but the other ones were from something totally different, do you?
No, because it has an orientation about it. It's oriented, again, in a somewhat vertical orientation, similar to many of these other sets of wounds.
I don't know what that means. It has a vertical orientation. How does that help us understand if this wound existed before or after the so-called dog attack?
It has some similarity of pattern.
So you think this was caused during the alleged dog attack?
Yes.
Okay. What caused this wound during the alleged dog attack?
I don't know.
Is that because there's no methodology or comparative standards, so you can't compare it to anything?
No, this because there's not enough specificity in that one particular wound all by itself.
What are the options? How could it have been caused during this dog attack?
By a tooth?
Okay.
Or claw, most likely.
Could have been caused by the ground?
I doubt it, considering that, again, it's oriented in a similar fashion to the rest of the lesions.
Okay. When you read the background facts of this case, well, let me ask you. If a dog attacks an arm, it's going to create force on the arm, wouldn't it?
It depends on how much penetrate. Yes, it depends on how strong the bite is, how much penetration, it gets through the clothing, clothing that's on the intervening, between the arm and the dog is going to present a little bit of a buffer.
Well, let's talk about the force on the arm. Mm-hmm. If this was a dog attack, as you claim, mm-hmm. that means the teeth and or the claws penetrated that sweater and caused an abrasion on Mr. O'Keefe's arm, correct?
Yes.
So there had to be an amount of force pulling on the arm to create that friction, which led to the abrasion.
Yes? Yes.
Okay. Did you know from any of the facts that you reviewed that when Mr. O'Keefe supposedly left the car, he had a glass in his hand with a straw in the glass?
I'm aware that there was a glass in his hand.
And you're aware when he was found by the side of the road that glass, the broken part of the glass, was right near him with the straw?
I don't know anything about the straw, but yes.
Okay.
I know.
And so if there's a dog attack and somebody's holding a glass, right, they're not likely to continue to hold on to the glass throughout the duration of the attack and then move somewhere else with that glass.
I don't know if he was holding on to the glass during the dog attack.
Well, hypothetically, assume that the evidence is he supposedly was holding the glass. Wouldn't a dog attack rip that out of his hand? Wouldn't he drop the glass?
There are many possibilities here. He could have transferred it to the other hand.
Let's look at wound number 5. Do you remember testifying about this?
Yes.
And you said it looks like an arch?
It does,
okay.
To me.
Are you saying the arch is on the top or on the bottom?
No, I thought the arch was on the bottom. By bottom, I mean what we call proximal part of the arm. So right here is where I think the arch is.
And if this is an arch and these are dog bites, these would be the canines.
They could be. However, I can't rule out that this is, because of the curvature of the arm, I can't rule out that this was from a canine and incisor teeth.
Well, this is a different angle than here, right? But there's no flexion like in the elbow on this wound area. This is the bottom of the wrist, right?
That's correct. However, yeah. That part of the arm has a different configuration than the upper arm. And it's got a bone right underneath it.
So you're
the ulna bone.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's got the ulnar bone. So
okay.
a wound to that area is going to look different than a similarly placed or caused wound to this area, which has a lot of padding underneath it from the soft subcutaneous tissue and doesn't have the protuberance of this bone right here.
We have a distance problem when we compare these, don't we?
We have a what?
A distance problem. The distances are different. If these are canines, obviously it's a different dog or something else that caused it because the distances are clearly different, right?
Again, one has to know how wounds occur. And I didn't say that those are definitely two canine teeth on the periphery. I'm saying that I believe that this is a combination of canine and incisor teeth.
When a dog bites, in tears. You see a missing tear pattern, don't you? You see the skin gets torn on many occasions?
Yes, but we don't have any of that here. We have no penetration, penetrating wounds here.
Right. Is it remarkable to you that if this was a dog bite with canines, there is no tearing of the skin? Is that remarkable to you?
No, because that dog was not able to create the force enough to penetrate the skin through that sweater.
Could I have Exhibit 32, please? You've seen this picture before?
Yes.
Okay. And this allegedly is a dog bite from Chloe?
Yes.
And you see the tearing of the skin, don't you?
Yes.
And you can see the corners where the incisors would penetrate through a puncture. Yes?
I'm not sure what teeth punctured this, but yes. I see the skin is all penetrated.
This is consistent with the literature of a tear and a hold and a pull, right?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not.
This is not consistent with the dog biting and then pulling the skin.
This is consistent with an avulsion wound caused by a dog.
Okay. Very different wound than what we looked at on Mr. O'Keefe's arm.
On
Mr. O'Keefe's arm, very different, right?
Correct.
Okay. If we can go back to 5, please. Now, your opinion that this is a dog attack.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had peer review of this opinion with this photograph?
No.
Well, you would agree that this dog bite science is what they call a soft science. Would you agree with that?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Okay, well, it's not like DNA. It's opinion-based. It's subjective-based, the science of dog bites, isn't it?
It's based on a lot of training.
Yeah, and a lot of subjective opinion, too, wouldn't you say?
There's opinion here, yes.
Uncertainty.
There is some, yes.
Right. And being that type of science, haven't you read in the studies about peer review, how peer review works?
What specifically are you...
That you have another qualified professional look at it and question and vet whatever opinions you're giving. Did you go through that process at all?
I've been through that process, yes.
You've been? Okay, and who peer-reviewed
your findings? You mean this case?
Yes.
Oh, no, not this case. No, I thought that this information was rather confidential, and I didn't share this information.
Well, you discussed with the defense other information in this case, didn't you, about the accident and about people's opinions. You've discussed that as part of your opinion, haven't you?
Yes.
Okay. Did you know that the U.S. Attorney's Office employed a deputy medical examiner to look at these bites, and then he had commented that the wounds of 2 to 3 millimeters up to 7 centimeters were documented on Mr. O'Keefe's right arm, and the injuries do not photographically appear to be nor are described as puncture bite wounds and thus are highly unlikely to be the result of an animal bite attack. Did you get that expert opinion from the United States Attorney's Office when they investigated this case to consider as part of peer review?
Objection, Your Honor.
No, I did not get that, but...
Did you say you did get that?
No, I did not get that. However, okay. I have a comment about that.
Go ahead.
Please.
Not very medical exam... Not very many medical examiners have the experience first of all, have experience with dog bites. Seeing hundreds and thousands of dog bites and treating them, and not very many medical examiners have even autopsied a case of dog bites. So some physicians have certain opinions based on what they know, they don't have my experience. I'm sorry.
Do you know if Mr. Walsh has your experience or not?
I don't know. Who is it?
The gentleman who gave this opinion that was employed by the federal government. Do you know if he had your experience or
what's
not?
What's his name?
Mr. Walsh. John... Walsh.
No, I don't.
So he could have more experience for all you know.
Oh, I'm highly unlikely.
Okay, you have more experience than anybody in the country.
I think I have at least as much experience as any other possible person in the country. And I have it from both aspects, from the clinical aspect and from the forensic aspect.
Did you review the opinion of Dr. Kenneth Kinsey, who said that those injuries were not caused by a canine?
Dr. who?
Kenneth Kinsey.
No.
No. If you look, I believe Mr. O'Keefe's arm were completely bent when he sustained the injuries. A lot of them match up. They're a continuation of another injury.
And I don't even know who Dr. Kinsey is.
Okay.
Is that a medical doctor?
So you don't have any peer review at all. You have nobody who's given an opinion similar to yours about this being dog bites, do you?
Is Dr. Kinsey, I'm sorry.
You have no peer review. You have no peer endorsement. Everything that you, you have no peer endorsement for any of your opinions, do you?
I didn't think I was allowed to show these pictures to anyone.
When you're giving opinions about the teeth and suggesting that this might be bent, things you don't really know about, you would agree it would be best to look at the dog, Chloe, itself, right?
Not necessary.
If you looked at Chloe and examined Chloe, you would know whether or not there are any irregularities in Chloe's teeth, wouldn't you?
Yes, I might.
If you would see it, wouldn't you?
Well, if I got close enough, and
right,
I don't know if I want to get close enough to Chloe.
Well, why wouldn't you want to? You're a medical doctor. You want to be have an opinion to a degree of medical certainty. Why wouldn't you want to see the best evidence of the distance between the teeth and Chloe? Why wouldn't you?
I'd have to make sure that I wasn't putting myself in danger.
Okay. And if you saw Chloe, you could see if there was any missing teeth, couldn't you?
Yes.
You could actually measure the canines in Chloe, and then you could compare them to what you're calling dog wounds on Mr. O'Keefe's arm. You could do that, couldn't you?
I would have to get a veterinarian to sedate the patient, the dog, because that going near that dog would be very dangerous. They'd have to sedate the dog to measure the intercanine distance.
What if you did get a veterinarian to sedate the dog, and then you could safely go and look at Chloe, and you could actually take a mold of Chloe's mouth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? You've read that in the literature.
Yeah,
the best way to
come.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, only one person we know.
You've read in the literature the best way to compare the teeth and the mark is you actually do a mold of the dog's mouth. You know how valuable that can be in analysis, don't you?
It can be, but the question, I believe the question here is not which dog created these wounds, but did a dog create these wounds?
That's not my question. My question is, if you took a mold of Chloe's mouth, you would see the distance between the canines. And you could measure it, quantify it, not guess and speculate, quantify it, correct?
Your Honor, could we approach, please?
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so you can continue, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Russell, when you're examining these separate wounds and the distances and the depths between them and guessing whether or not it was a canine or incisor, wouldn't you agree it would be helpful if you had a safe opportunity to actually examine the dog, Chloe?
It could be.
If you had a safe opportunity to examine Chloe, you could look at the size of Chloe's jaw.
It could be, but those wounds on you're shaking your
head. That's not my question.
Okay.
My question is, if you had an opportunity to go safely and look at Chloe, you would be able to tell the size of Chloe's jaw. You could measure it.
Possibly, yes.
You could determine the gape of Chloe's jaw, couldn't you?
I don't know what the gape of
how it bites, how wide it opens up.
I'm not sure I could determine that.
Okay, you could look at Chloe's teeth.
As they are now, yes.
You could measure the distance between the canines if they still exist in Chloe's mouth.
Yes, from a model of or imprint from Chloe's mouth.
You could take a mold.
Right, a mold.
Or you could take a tape measure or a ruler and you could measure. You could
do
both.
Wouldn't be very reliable.
I see. you could determine whether or not she had one incisor or whether she had 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 incisors.
Currently, yes, but I can't tell what the condition of the teeth were during the incident.
Uh-huh. You could tell if there's any missing teeth.
Correct.
Right. You could look at Chloe's paws, couldn't you?
Yes.
You could do moldings of those and measure those as well, couldn't you?
I'm not sure that that would be useful.
Well, if you think that some of these wounds could have been scratches, you could look at the nails and the shape of the nails, couldn't you?
Well, nails are frequently cut on a regular basis, and the distance between the nails, as you mentioned earlier, can change depending on whether or not the par is in a compressed state or a more relaxed state. So that wouldn't be reliable.
So you would not even consider measuring the paws because you think that would be unreliable?
I don't think it would be reliable, no.
You wouldn't study the toenails to see the shape of them?
If I could, I'd look to see if there's an abnormal toenail,
right?
For instance,
right.
Yes.
And so there would be a benefit to doing that. You didn't do that, though, did you? You didn't go see Chloe and take a mold of Chloe's mouth, did you?
It wasn't necessary.
Well, did you go up and take pictures or measure the teeth of Chloe?
No.
Did you ask to?
No. It was my understanding that Chloe was in another state, but again, I didn't think it was necessary, and I have reasons why I didn't think it was necessary.
You thought that Chloe was in another state. Did you ever discuss going to see Chloe and doing these studies on Chloe so you could see if they were dissimilar to these abrasions?
I was asked to evaluate the wounds.
Uh-huh. Do you know that Chloe exists, that we provided notice to you that we went up and saw Chloe and took molds? Did you know that?
Objection, Your Honor.
Did you know that? Going to allow it. Did you know that, Doctor?
I do know that now, yes. Well,
did you know that before you testified the last date in this case, that we actually went up and found Chloe and took molds and measured the paws and the teeth? Did you know that we did that?
I don't know. I don't recall.
Before you came in and testified at the last hearing, you don't recall whether you knew that Chloe was available?
I believe I knew that there was a consultant, that you hired a consultant, and I didn't know what that consultant was going to be doing.
Okay. Now that you know that Chloe's available, wouldn't those molds be helpful? Wouldn't you want to look at them and compare them to the distances on the abrasions on Mr. O'Keefe's arm?
Judging, Your Honor.
I don't think it's necessary for many reasons.
Okay. If the distance of Chloe's canines is significantly different than these abrasions in this picture, you would agree that the abrasions in Mr. O'Keefe's arm could not have been caused by Chloe. Would you agree?
No, I wouldn't agree to that statement. Mm-hmm. Again, because of various factors such as elasticity of the skin, shrinkage, there's various factors.
So, if I understand, you have no interest in examining or seeing Chloe. It's irrelevant to your opinion?
I don't think I need to see Chloe.
Well, you said earlier when I asked you about particular wounds, it would be helpful to know these things about missing teeth and spacing and distance between the canines. Is that no longer helpful to your opinion?
No, I think you're mischaracterizing what I said. I believe I said that it would give information about the condition of the teeth now, but it wouldn't give information about the condition of the teeth when that incident happened.
In the spirit of medicine and science, isn't more information good?
Generally.
Generally. But you generally would not want to go see and examine Chloe?
I don't think it's necessary, and there's so many reasons why.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Lessie, go right ahead.
If I could have you to order
sure.
The exhibits. Thank you, Your Honor.
They're organized. I just want to make sure I have the right ones. Thank you, Mr. Brennan. For the record, we have pre-marked number 33337.
Thank you.
In Your Honor, and thank you, Mr. Sullivan, I have provided the court and offered to counsel, but counsel already had the copies, a notebook that has exhibit numbers.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Brennan has agreed that all the exhibits in the notebook can be in evidence. So that's number two. And so if I'm remembering correctly, Your Honor's previous direction that if they're in evidence, just refer to them as such. So that's
yes.
What I plan on doing.
Yes.
And what I also plan on doing, Your Honor, is taking the exhibits that are in the notebook. I've got non-binder ones individually for the witness that are pre-marked. Does that work also?
Sure. You can just put them up on the stand with Dr. Robson.
In my approach to do that?
Sure.
May I talk to the witness and just point out where they are?
I think you can give them to her. I think she can figure out numerically what's what. Right. All right, Mr. Lessie, I'm not rushing you at all, but is it safe to say that you won't finish in 20 minutes?
That is safe, Your Honor.
Okay, so we will plan on breaking at 1. Mr. Clerk will have to cancel our afternoon list.
Yes.
How long do you think it might take? And I'm not holding you to this, just curious.
I appreciate the question. If I can just have a quick moment, because I knew what my redirect was going to be until Mr. Brennan went, and I'd like to consider what he did.
Jim.
My best estimate is approximately 2 hours.
Okay, I'd like us to finish by 4 today.
Yes, Your Honor, understood.
Mr. Brennan, I know you have no idea how long recross might be, but we'll try and finish by 4 today.
I understood, Your Honor.
Okay.
May I now proceed, Your
Honor?
Please. Thank you. Dr. Russell, during cross-examination at this Daubert hearing on December 12th, you were asked whether you believed you were an expert in the areas of orthopedics, accident reconstruction, biomechanics, motor vehicle accidents, and defensive wounds. In your 29 plus years of experience as an emergency medicine physician and training emergency medicine physicians, are you aware of any emergency room or emergency department physician being board certified in orthopedics?
No.
Are you aware of any emergency medicine physician being required to be an expert in overall orthopedics?
No. General orthopedics, no.
But do emergency medicine physicians nonetheless routinely evaluate and treat people injured in motor vehicle accidents?
Yes.
And did you, in your 29 years of experience as emergency medicine physician, routinely evaluate and treat people injured in motor vehicle accidents?
Yes, I worked at a busy level one trauma center.
During your cross-examination in response to a question, you stated that you were an expert in emergency orthopedics. Can you please explain that?
Yes. So emergency orthopedics is a subset or just a part of the overall field of general orthopedics. So in emergency orthopedics, physicians care for, evaluate, diagnose, treat patients who have acute injuries and that don't need operative care. So acute fractures, acute dislocations, those types of injuries are done in many busy emergency rooms right in the emergency room. And that's what I have expertise in.
Did the rotation at the, you just said busy hospital that you were at, did the rotation when you were training, were you required to take a part of the training in emergency orthopedics?
I was required to take a 1 month rotation in orthopedics.
Now, you were asked during cross-examination at this voir dire about one particular specialized training that you had involving motor vehicle accidents, and you, in response to a question from Mr. Brennan, agreed that that particular course was rudimentary. Do you recall that?
Yes.
When did you take that course that you referred to as rudimentary?
It was around 1979.
And what profession did you have when you took this rudimentary course that you were asked about?
I was a police officer at that time.
And since that one rudimentary course that you had, have you had further training with regard and experience to humans injured in motor vehicle accidents?
Yes, much.
And describe the much that experience and training you've had in that area.
Well, during my 29 years working in the emergency department, we saw motor vehicle accident victims on every shift. And usually there were multiple victims on every shift. So that was part of it. Plus we had lectures and seminars on motor vehicle accidents, victims.
And is your focus in your testimony, both in June of this year and in December of this year, on wounds from motor vehicle accidents or how motor vehicle accidents occur?
So as a physician, my focus is on the wounds and injuries caused by motor vehicle accidents and how to diagnose and treat them.
So are you sitting as a medical doctor giving opinions on medical causation of the injuries to Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes.
During cross-examination, in this hearing, you were asked about whether you were an expert in accident reconstruction. Is being an expert in accident reconstruction necessary to practice emergency medicine?
No.
Does an emergency medicine physician need to be an expert in accident reconstruction to evaluate and treat people injured in motor vehicle accidents in the emergency department?
No.
In your 29 years experience as an emergency medicine physician and training emergency medicine physicians, are you aware of any emergency medicine physician being an expert in accident reconstruction?
No.
Is accident reconstruction even relevant to the practice of emergency medicine?
No.
Is whether an emergency medicine physician an expert in accident reconstruction a reasoned question in the field of emergency medicine?
No.
During cross-examination in this hearing, you were also asked about whether you have a degree in biomechanics. In your 29 years experience as an emergency medicine physician and training emergency medicine physicians, are you aware of any emergency medicine physician who is an expert in biomechanics?
No.
Is being an expert in biomechanics necessary to practice emergency medicine?
No.
Is whether an emergency medicine physician is an expert in the field of biomechanics a reasoned question in the field of emergency medicine?
No.
In your 29 years of experience as a medical doctor, where do most people go for the treatment of acute injuries from motor vehicle accidents?
To the emergency department.
Do you know, or have you had any experience where a person who has an acute injury from a motor vehicle accident goes to an expert in biomechanics?
No.
Do you know whether anybody who's injured in a motor vehicle accident, acute injury, goes to an expert in accident reconstruction?
No.
On cross in this hearing, you were asked about your expertise in, quote, self-defense. Was your direct testimony in this hearing in your report of December 9 about self-defense or defensive wounds?
Would you repeat that question?
Sure. Was your direct testimony in this hearing in December and the report that you prepared dated December 9th, was that about self-defense or defensive wounds?
My testimony was about defensive wounds, not self-defense.
What's the difference between self-defense and defensive wounds?
Well, I believe self-defense is something like martial arts and the study and techniques of defending oneself from an attack. That's what I believe self-defense is.
You were also asked on cross in this hearing about whether not observing how a wound to the posterior side of a forearm occurred provided you with sufficient context to determine whether a wound was a defensive wound. What context did you have with regard to the wounds on the right arm of the decedent to reach your conclusion that those wounds were defensive wounds?
Well, the context is the configuration, the location of the wounds. The location of the wounds and the presence of a dog.
In the cross in this hearing, you've been asked whether you have observed how wounds are created. In your experience, do emergency physicians or forensic pathologists get to observe how wounds are created?
No.
Do emergency medicine physicians and forensic pathologists nonetheless often reach medical diagnostic conclusions without observing how the wounds are created?
Yes, they do.
And is that a common or uncommon practice for emergency medicine physicians?
Well, that's common.
How common?
Well, I think it's fairly common.
You were also asked whether someone could, and this is on cross in this hearing, whether someone could incur wounds to the posterior side of the forearm if they fall to the ground backwards. Did the wounds to the right arm of the decedent in this case arise from him falling to the ground backwards?
No.
Why not?
Because of the configuration and the pattern of the wounds.
And do you come to that conclusion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty?
Yes.
You are also asked on cross in this hearing about when someone hits a moving or a floating object, whether the patterns are dynamic and changing all the time, and the hitting concept. Can you please explain the question that was posed to you about moving, floating objects and hitting objects and how you evaluated those issues with respect to the decedent in this case?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Doctor, did you understand the question?
Not exactly.
Okay, ask the question differently.
On cross, you were asked about when someone hits a moving or floating object, whether the patterns are dynamic or change. Can you please explain those concepts in that question and how you analyze them with regard to the wounds of the decedent in this case.
Okay. When there is movement and there is contact, there is movement of the, for lack of a better word, inflicting object, such as a tooth or something else, there is movement along the skin during the period of time in which they are in contact. That's what I understood that I was being asked.
On cross-examination, you were asked several questions about pattern recognition and pattern recognition methodology. And you were asked about the development, that's what I want to start with, of your pattern recognition skills with regard to dog-inflicted wounds. How did you develop your pattern recognition skills with regard to dog-inflicted wounds on humans?
Well, as I testified earlier, I've seen many, many, many dog bite victims. And sometimes I was able to I closely examined their wounds. And not only examined, but evaluated, treated. But in many cases, I was also able to talk to them and ask them about how the wounds were inflicted. And I did this over and over and over again, hundreds of times. I think I testified to about at least 500 times over the years. So as you do that, you learn. You know, you recognize, you get sharper. So that's how I did.
And did you also edit any peer-reviewed publications that were relevant to pattern recognition and pattern recognition methodology?
Yes, I did. Now, pattern recognition in general, first of all, pattern recognition in general is a really important feature of medicine. It's critical. It's so important. And we start learning pattern recognition from medical school, from the beginning of medical school, learning how to recognize patterns of cells in pap smears and biopsies, patterns of cells. That's what a lot of pathology is, pattern recognition. And so and even radiologists use pattern recognition when they look at x-rays of pneumonia, for instance. You know, different pneumonias have different patterns. So pattern recognition is something that I've been doing since the beginning of medical school, and actually a little bit before medical school. So that was 50 years ago, I think. 40 years ago.
Is pattern recognition some novel or unscientific process, or is it rooted in evidence-based medical science?
Oh, it's definitely evidence-based medical science. And in fact, there are textbooks on how to recognize certain patterns. So there, for instance, in pathology and, in medicine, there are textbooks on how to tell if somebody's got liver cancer or somebody's got, some other disease. This is pattern recognition for the most part. And x-rays, too. It's in textbooks. There are huge textbooks and numerous textbooks written about this.
Is pattern recognition methodology that you've been testifying about, is that generally accepted in the medical community?
Pattern recognition as a methodology? Absolutely.
All right, Mr. Lessie, we're going to take our break. We'll be back at 2 o'clock.
Thank you, Your Honor. All rise to the court, please.
Thank you.
Go right ahead, Mr. Lessie.
Thank you, Your Honor. Welcome back, Dr. Russell. We left off talking about pattern recognition and your pattern recognition methodology. Are there patterns to dog-inflicted wounds from civilian dogs?
Yes.
What are the patterns?
Oh, there are several patterns. You know, there could be just simple abrasions and grouped abrasions. There can be, depending on the depth of the injury, you know, there could be hole, what they call the hole and tear pattern, if the teeth penetrated through the skin. There can be a variety of patterns, including parallel lines and others.
Is there support in the medical literature for these patterns and your pattern recognition methodology?
Yes.
Can you name the authors of any peer-reviewed studies supporting the patterns and pattern methodology?
Yes, so the two come to mind right now. One is written by De Munich and et al. And there's another one with Dr. Pollack et al.
And to help our stellar stenographer, De Munich is D-E-M-U-N-N-Y-N-C-K. If you could please turn to exhibit number 33 that is in front of you.
Yes.
Let me know when you have that exhibit.
I have it.
Do you recognize, is this the De Munich peer-reviewed article that you were just referring to?
Yes.
What I'd like you to do, Dr. Russell, is to point out where in this article there is the rooting of the pattern and pattern methodology, recognition methodology, that you've been testifying to. Where is it located? And with the court's permission, I'd like you to read the specific sentences and paragraphs where that methodology is rooted in it.
Tell us first, because if it's a whole page, we're not going to do that.
It's not a whole page, Your Honor.
Let's just see where it is. Okay.
Okay. On page 298, the second paragraph on the left-hand side. Okay.
Your Honor, it's not going to be reading a whole page, it's just the portions of this. Is that acceptable to the court?
So you can read a portion of that paragraph, Doctor? Because what you're trying to do is convince me, right?
Understood.
These are in evidence. So
yes.
Could you tell me where it is, please?
Okay. So second paragraph.
Where do you
paragraph.
Start?
So it's part of the second, the third, and the fourth parts. So it says, dogs have some very specific dental and maxillofacial features. They have 42 teeth, 20 in the upper jaw, 22 in the lower jaw. Usually the mandibular dental arch is narrower and shorter than the maxillar, and the shape of the dental arches varies among the different breeds. There are natural gaps between the teeth that are attenuated or accentuated depending on the breed.
And then if you could skip to the next paragraph, because we want to follow the court's direction not to read everything,
right.
Just trying to focus on the key aspects. Is there something in the next paragraph that also supports it?
Okay, yes. Okay. The above features attribute to the characteristics of dog bites.
Can you tell us what that sentence means? And does that sentence have any relation to the concept of pattern recognition?
Yes, it does.
Explain how.
Okay. Well, so they're talking, well, first of all, the previous paragraph was talking about the dentition of the dogs and how there's some variation in the dentition. And then this next sentence says the above features attribute to or relate to or are relevant to the characteristics of what the dog bites would look like.
And then as you continue on in that paragraph, mm-hmm. again, not reading every sentence, but is there another part of the paragraph that continues over on to the next page that also supports your testimony that this is talking about pattern recognition methodology?
Yes. So it goes on to say that the puncture wound, a round hole, is made by the canine tooth of either the upper or lower jaw on one side that serves as an anchorage, while the other teeth cut into the flesh, causing stretch lacerations in the process of biting, shaking, and tearing. This should be considered pathognomonic for dog bites, especially when accompanied by tissue defects and claw marks, the latter being narrow, superficial, linear abrasions arranged parallel to each other, four or five in number, and usually found in the vicinity of the bite. This pattern allows differential diagnosis with bites of other animals which are not accompanied by pulling and shaking, nor by the usage of the prominent canines, and with stab wounds caused by sharp instruments.
Does what you just read establish the pattern and the pattern recognition methodology for dog bites?
Objection, number of grounds.
Objection, the objection sustained, ask the question differently.
What do you conclude from the language you just read with regard to patterns and pattern recognition methodology?
Well, I conclude that patterns are important, and they are what I call highly representative, but they call pathognomonic, meaning that there is nothing else that causes those.
Let's focus on the word, people pronounce it differently, yeah. Pathognomonic. What does pathognomonic mean in medicine?
Pathognomonic, to me, I believe it means that you can make a diagnosis based on these factors that are present to the exclusion of any other diagnosis because they are so specific.
So we talked about on your direct, and it was raised on cross, the concept of a differential diagnosis, right?
Yes. Yes.
When you have pathognomonic features, is it required to even have a differential diagnosis?
Not really.
Why?
Because the pathognomonic features mean that you have the entity or the condition that that is explained.
Does pathognomonic mean that the features themselves rule out other possibilities?
Yes, that's what I believe it means.
And is that how you interpret what the author is saying in this article?
Yes.
Please proceed lastly to the next two paragraphs, and then we can move on to the next study, I believe.
In conclusion, to identify a lesion as a dog bite wound, it should have ragged and irregular wound edges, show multiple parallel linear scratches or drying scuff abrasions, include a puncture wound and sometimes an avulsion with irregular borders resembling a dental arch print.
And could you please, as the last paragraph will focus on, read what you consider important in the next paragraph?
The shape of dog bite wounds depends on the size and breed of the dog and will differ
whether or not the full dentition was used to produce them.
Let's stop there. What does it mean to you when the author says, and will differ whether or not the full dentition was used to produce them?
So what that means is that if the bite does not include the full, let me back up. What it means is the appearance of the bite will vary depending on whether or not all of the teeth impacted the skin or just some of the teeth impacted the skin.
Please read the next sentence.
Only in ideal circumstances will a complete impression of all frontal teeth be found, and often only a prominent canine impression can be seen.
Is what you just read relevant at all to what you analyzed with regard to the wounds of the decedent in this case?
Very relevant.
How?
Because many of those wounds on Mr. O'Keefe's arm were only partial bites. They did not have the complete dentition.
Do you recall Mr. Brennan saying various times that you have no support for your pattern recognition methodology?
Yes.
Is this support for your pattern recognition methodology?
Yes.
Is it direct support for the pattern recognition methodology you have applied in this case?
Yes.
Is there another article? You mentioned two. You mentioned Demunic and Pollock. So let's turn to, and Your Honor, this will be the second and last article.
Okay.
Please turn to Exhibit 34. And is this the Pollock, P-O-L-L-A-K, study that you have mentioned multiple times in your testimony and that's in your report?
Yes.
Please, like we just did with the Demunic article, please identify the portions of this study that support, you've testified, support your pattern recognition methodology.
Okay.
And let's
well,
do
start
a seriatim from the beginning.
Yeah,
yes,
I'll
please.
From the beginning. So, the dog's front. So, the first paragraph here.
Okay. The summary?
Yeah, it says summary. Yes, summary. In the absence of her parents, a girl of 4 months was killed by a 2-year-old male Rottweiler dog belonging to the same family. The dog's front teeth marks of individual circular or scratch-like abrasions, as well as slit-like skin severances of the skin, arranged in curved lines. It seems to be a word or two missing.
No, you missed a word. That's
I
right.
did.
Okay. That's okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. The pattern of skin lesions largely corresponded to the anatomy of the dog's set of teeth.
Let's stop there. How does the sentence you just read, what's the key component of that sentence that supports your pattern recognition methodology?
That sentence, the pattern of skin lesions.
Now let's go down to the keywords. Is there anything in the keywords that supports and roots your opinion that you've given several times that there's in dog bite wounds on humans, there's a pattern?
Yes, so there's about five or so keywords. One of them is injury pattern.
Why is there a section in many medical studies of key words?
So when you're researching, you can find the articles quickly.
And is there any importance to the use of key words when there is a study published?
Well, yes, because it's a key concept of the paper.
Please proceed to and I know it may take a little bit of time, and with the court's permission, to the next section of this article that supports your opinion that there is a pattern to dog bite wounds on humans, and that there's a pattern recognition methodology used to discern them.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.